What's up, guys? I'm Evan Turner, co-host of the Point Forward podcast, alongside Andre Iguodala. We got a special series out now, all about our favorite NBA cities, the greatest places to travel, the evolving cultures and cuisines, and some of our most memorable experiences while we were on the road during our many years in the NBA. We talk about Miami, Chicago, New York, and many more. Tune in to Courts and Culture, the Point Forward Travel Guide, sponsored by Hennessy. You can find it on Point Forward Feed on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to episode 296 of the Talking Chop podcast. I am your host, Brad Roland. In a bit of a strange time, it's Wednesday evening, but in the middle of the All-Star break, it was a good time to record with a couple of days before the Braves' next game. And joining me, as he often does, is Scott Coleman. Hello, sir.
Hey, Brad. Good to be on with you, buddy. Hope you're able to get a little bit of time off here now that basketball season is winding down. I don't know if I've talked to you since your Atlanta Hawks have had their season end, and then of course with the Braves have had not the best last week or so, but plenty to talk about, and it should be a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you're a subscriber to this podcast, you've probably seen all the content. There's been a flurry of audio content on this feed. On the positive side, a ton of draft stuff from Eric and Matt and Garrett and all of the Road to Atlanta crew. Three podcasts in like a 3.5 day span that are still on this feed right now. So we got out of the way basically during that, and that was why we didn't do a regular Sunday night show. But they've killed it. So listen to all of that. Catch up, subscribe, etc. My last podcast episode was a solo show, unfortunately, to react to the Ronald Acuna news. So I promise the listeners we're not going to spend too much time on just lamenting the absence of Acuna, but because you were not on the on that recording with me when I did it first thing in the morning on a Sunday and I was probably half asleep. Thoughts, Scott, on the on the loss of the best player on the Braves roster?
Yeah, so I was driving out to San Diego. For those who don't know, I'm in Arizona, so it's about a 5 or 6 hour drive, and I am driving out in the middle of absolutely nowhere on Saturday afternoon. And within about 5 minutes, I got three texts unsolicited from friends saying, "Oh man, that Acuna injury looks bad." And of course, I'm going 85 miles an hour down the highway and cannot look at my phone to see what on earth they are talking about. Yeah, it's heartbreaking for Ronald. It's a brutal blow for the Braves' chances this year. We knew that if they were going to make a comeback in the second half of this year, it was going to be difficult to do, and they were going to need all hands on deck, especially with the injuries that they've already suffered the first couple months of this season. To lose Ronald to that is heartbreaking. You sure hope that he's able to make a full recovery and get back to his elite level, but man, it just sucks. A kid who is so universally beloved by his teammates and his and players around the league, it's a loss for the game of baseball as a whole. And we can only hope that with some rest and rehabilitation and everything goes well with his surgery, that he's back at some point early in 2022 and can help carry this team as he's done this past year.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it's obviously brutal. And I talked about that on the solo quick recording that I did. And I was encouraged to see sort of the outpouring that was during, you know, it was the All-Star game and all that stuff. There was lots of talk about Ronnie and how brutal of a loss it was for Atlanta. Everyone sort of acknowledges that this is one of the top five, you know, faces of baseball right now. And in addition to him, you know, being fun and all that stuff, he's just an awesome player. And it sucks, obviously. And it leaves the Braves with a massive hole that we'll get into a little bit later on in the show. But obviously that cloud is still hanging over everything now, and the Braves have only played one game since then, so it's kind of, not that it hasn't hit everybody yet, but we haven't had the pleasure, let's just say, to watch the Braves without him very much. That's going to be setting in a lot, beginning with when they return to action on Friday, so at least wanted to start there briefly. We'll get away from that now, and we'll probably come back to that kind of stuff, but I want to give you a chance to weigh in since it was, I was not going to call you at 4 a.m. when I knew you were on vacation to record that podcast.
I appreciate you, Brad. You know, I'm here for the pod, but that would have been bad for, I think, all parties involved.
Yeah, on vacation and all. Just for the record, Ronnie said that he was disappointed and sad, of course, and vowed to return, quote, stronger than ever, and that he put maximum effort in with the rehab. And Snicker called him arguably the best player in the game right now. You know, that's encouraging to hear. Obviously, Snit's kind of he's not always been like glowing over the top about Ronnie in the way that some manager might be about players. So yeah. I was encouraged to hear him say that, even in dire circumstances. At any rate, we'll move on. Usually we would go through the games with some depth, not crazy depth in the regular season, but we usually get to all of them. I will say this, we're not going to do that on this podcast just because it's been a few days, and also last week was kind of maddening. I will blow through this now very, very quickly. They lose the first two games in Pittsburgh, and they got smoked on Monday, last Monday. Then the Tyler Matzik implosion happened a week ago Tuesday. That was not a lot of fun. Then they got a little bit hot. They actually scored 12 runs in a three-inning span to beat Pittsburgh, and they won three in a row, Scott. But of course, yeah. As they reached 500, they will not go over that mark, so they had to lose on Sunday to fall behind. So that's the short version of what transpired, and now they go into the break one game under 500, and they still have not been over all season long.
It was, I don't even want to call it poetic justice, because it's such a cruel way to end the first half, losing Ronnie, but all year long it's been a theme. It seems like every week you and I and Eric have talked about how this team just seems to fall a few games below 500, and then they get close to 500, and it finally seemed like the stars were aligning and they were going to have some real momentum going into the second half of the season, especially after losing 2 out of 3 in Pittsburgh. Though if they finish strong in Miami, and what happens, they get to 500 on the day that Ronald Acuna tears his ACL and is out indefinitely. It was kind of a fitting way to wrap up just a miserable first half. We of course know all of the injuries, the off-the-field incident with Marcell Ozuna. And really, since day one, this team has never been at full strength. There's always been some kind of injury. There's always been some kind of hiccup that's held them back. And even without those, I think this team still had a chance because of how good Acuna and Freddie and Ozzy and all those types are. But, man, it was just the one thing that couldn't happen to close out the first half. And of course, unfortunately, it happened with Ronnie's knee, and it just sucks. It's going to be a real blow. And I guess it was a fitting way to end a very disappointing first half.
Yeah. They, you know, you sort of allude to it there, but they already would have been fighting an uphill battle, which we've chronicled quite a bit. And the numbers tell that story. The projections tell that story that we'll get into a little bit later too. But even with Ronald, again, one of the five best players in the league, even with him in the middle of the lineup, they would have been they would have had some tough sledding ahead potentially with the schedule and the hole they dug for themselves. And then you take away a guy who was on pace for like an 8-win season, and you take him out of the lineup halfway through the year and replace him with guys who have done yeoman's work, guys like, you know, Heredia and Almonte, who have like been okay in their role, but they're not Ronald Acuna. And now you do the math, as we'll get into, and it's going to be tough, we'll just say. As a way to get into a little bit of broad stuff, I'm going to just pose to you the lineup that they used in Sunday's game, the only game that they played since Ronnie was out. And this is, obviously, it's a little bit of cherry-picking because it's only one lineup, but we'll get into some players along the way here. And I asked a question on Twitter that I'll ask you as well, but here's the lineup that they used on Sunday. It was Adrianza leading off and playing in the outfield. Freeman, Albies, Austin Riley, Arcia, who we should talk about in a second, playing the outfield as well, Dansby, Heredia, Kevin Smith, and the pitcher spot. So essentially, the way that I described this is basically two star-level guys in Freeman and Albies, at least coming into the year, we'll say, just to make it as broad as possible. This lineup would have been these eight players, two stars, two guys that you would have projected as like reasonable starters, and that's Swanson and Riley. And then four guys that I personally would have described as replacement level. You can talk around that. Maybe you're a little bit higher on, sure, on Arcia or whatever you want to say. But if I told anyone that these four individuals would be in the lineup at the same time, Adrianza, Arcia, Heredia, and Kevin Smith, you would have thought the world ended somewhere along the way, and that happened. So the question that I asked on Twitter while you were on vacation, Scott, is if you assume average pitching, how many wins do the Rays have with this lineup? I tell you nothing else other than, okay, their average pitching staff, this lineup, what number I got all kinds of responses, but where would you have landed with just these eight guys as a projection?
Yeah, I mean, goodness. 72 wins? I mean, that's if I would have told you this was going to be the lineup the day before the All-Star game back in March when we were doing the season preview pod, like you genuinely would have thought like something crazy happened, like like a crazy bout of COVID.
I didn't know who Kevin Smith was. That's for sure. And Arcia was not in the organization at that point. Same with all these guys. So yeah, obviously.
I mean, it's crazy. I mean, you talk about just everything this team has gone through, and maybe this is a good podcast, but you lose Acuna, which was the nail in the coffin. I guess it's not mathematically over by any means.
We'll come back to that.
yeah, weird things can happen, but it's not looking great. But, you know, you have Freddie Freeman, who is very good. Of course, he hasn't quite been the insane level that he was last summer, but nobody expected him to. But you lose Ozuna after, a month of the season. You lose Travis d'Arnaud 2 weeks into the season, and maybe he comes back by August. You know, Ozzie Albies has been very capable, very good, and that's to be expected. But, you know, other than that, Austin Riley was out of his mind for about half of the season, and he's been, frankly, pretty not great the other half of the season. Dansby Swanson is kind of who Dansby Swanson is. And then, you know, as you just said, Kevin Smith and the other fill-in, you know, spin the wheel and pick your outfielder of the day. While they've had a couple moments, these are not, you know, legitimately good big leaguers by any means. So it's been tough, and hey, maybe some fun second half storylines will emerge with these guys, but it's just hard to overcome so much that this team has underwent in the last 3 months.
You mentioned 72. That was a number that I think was like near the average of the responses I got. I saw some high 60s. I saw some people that were more, you know, more in the high 70s to 80. I'm gonna tell you what the lineup was in 2017 when they finished 72 and 90.
Yep.
Their most prominent lineup was essentially they had the Flower Suzuki combination, which actually worked out very, very well at catcher in that season. Then they had Freddie. Brandon Phillips was a prominent member of that infield.
Wow.
Rookie Dansby, well, I guess second year Dansby, a rookie Dansby, he was not great. Adonis Garcia, Matt Kemp, good ender, but still not a great hitting ender, but obviously one of the better versions, and then Markakis. That group, with worse pitching, to be fair, that group came up with 72 wins. Even with Ozzy coming up and being good when he came up, again, Suzuki and Flowers being incredible. Matt Adams had a great season that year. So there were some bright spots, but that's the kind of team you're looking at basically with this kind of group. And no one's saying that they're actually going to finish that badly this year. I mean, I guess they could, but it's just a reminder. Like the lineup, the bigger point is that the lineup they have right now, at least until guys like d'Arnaud can maybe come back, it's fairly dire. I mean, they could get hot for a little while. Again, sure. Guys like Heredia and Almonte have done a solid job. They've actually been playable in a way that. Has been fortunate. I mean, if you wanted to paint the picture, you talked about how things have gone wrong, and they obviously clearly have. But I would tell you that there are several players on the roster that they have gotten more than you would expect from at times. Like, for instance, you could argue that maybe Austin Riley has given you more than you expect on the whole this year. I would definitely tell you that Heredia, Adrianza, and Almonte have all been better than you would expect them to be.
Yep.
So it's not like it's been a complete disaster on the supporting guys. It's just all the high-profile injuries and the Ozuna fallout and all that, and Soroka and all that stuff. So I'm going to use this as a way to get in to talk about the guys who are remaining as we get into the second half. Before we get to that, a word from our sponsors on today's podcast.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right, Scott. I want to hit a couple. I'm not going to go through the entire roster, but I'm going to start positive because God knows it's going to be a fairly negative show today. A couple of guys who actually finished the first half hot that I want to make sure I at least highlight. One is Freddie. You talked about how Freddie's not been him quite as good as last year. That's definitely true, but he's actually scalding right now. The last 17 games, Freddie, his OPS is over 1,100 with three homers, six doubles, and 11 walks. Like, he's now kind of been that guy again. Now, you know, that's obviously, you know, 3 weeks or so, but it's good to see him, you know, firing on all cylinders. And also, this is probably overrated, but he seemed to be having a great time at the All-Star game, and Freddie was not having a great time earlier this season. So maybe that's a little bit of that. He did an interesting interview recently too, and with, I believe it was Jeff Schultz, and has been a little bit more open. I have no idea. Contract stuff's, that's for another day right now, Scott. We'll talk about Freddie's contract another day, but he has been very, very good lately.
He has. You know, nobody could have expected Freddie to be as out of his mind as he was last summer for those 2 months. But you're right. Early in the year, you never know what's going on off the field for those 3 hours when we see Freddie. But yeah, he just didn't look right. He didn't look like himself. I don't know what it is. I know he has three young children at home, and that probably plays a little bit of a factor in being away from his family. He has talked about that quite a bit over the last year and a half with everything going on in the world. But yeah, Freddie is, as we know, whenever he is, especially when he's going right and using the whole field the way that he does, he is as good as it gets. And you mentioned his numbers, an OPS above 1,100 over his last 17 games, hitting for power. He's walking, getting on base a bunch. So yeah, good things from Freddie, and he will certainly be counted on even more so moving forward.
Yeah, they have to have him be incredible, which isn't fair to him, but he's going to have to be incredible. And actually now, if you look at the full season numbers, they were on the lower end of his prime. Like, his prime basically has been the last, you know, nine seasons. It would be one of the shakier seasons of that nine, but no longer is it the worst. Like, for until about 2 weeks ago, he was having his worst season since he was like 23 years old, basically. And now his numbers look like they normally look. Last year was the outlier, and then it was incredible. But they basically look now like he has 19 homers, 88 games. He has an OPS, you know, of like 870. Like, he's obviously been a borderline star player this year. He's a star player in the aggregate for sure. But recently he's been incredible. So I want to at least mention that. Gives you some hope that maybe he has a tear in him to kind of carry their offense for a while here. Another guy who is much more divisive. I tweeted a stat about him today, and we'll come back to that in a second. But Dansby Swanson has been good lately. That's a controversial statement, but I promise you it's true. The last seven games before the break, he had five multi-hit games. And now, this is the stat that I tweeted out. People got mad at me. I was like, I just presented the numbers. No agenda. He now has a 99 WRC plus, and he's on pace for 2.5 F4 this season. So Dansby Swanson, suddenly, after the first half of the season, looks like a league average starter again. Welcome back, Dansby.
It's amazing. I think we know who Dansby is. He's effectively been the last 3 years He has run incredibly hot and incredibly cold, and there's really no middle ground between the two. It seems like he's either on one of these tears where he seemingly has four hits every single night, or he's in a stretch where he is one for his last 30 and striking out in 50% of his at-bats. That's who he is. Some guys are just more streaky than others. And if Dansby wants to have a really good second half, I've been critical of him, and I have some concerns about the increased strikeouts and his low on base percentage. But hey, if Dansby wants to prove me wrong and show me up in the second half, I would happily have that happen.
Yeah, people took it as me like caping for Dansby, and I promise you that was not the case. I was more surprised when I saw that suddenly he was back to basically being a league average hitter for the season. That actually stunned me, having watched him all year long. But I guess, you know, that one hot week can kind of carry you a little bit. And when you factor in the defense, projected to be 2.5 wins is not like going to shake the ground. But if that actually happened, you'd have a hard time, like, you know, really piling on him the way that people kind of have this year. So I was surprised too, and it wouldn't stun me at all if he went, you know, 0 for his next 30. I have no idea what's happened with Dansby. The fact that they actually hit the All-Star break is kind of at a bad time. Like, you kind of want to ride those streaks with Dansby, and now he's had, you know, a week off, basically. Not ideal for that, but we'll see what he can give them. I just wanted to make sure that I mentioned that. A couple more things, actually. We haven't talked about RC on this podcast much. Obviously, we talked about when they acquired him. He didn't play for a long time, and then he had a nice start. So in 7 games, his OPS is 860. He's had some nice moments. And there was lots of talk about how he was like going to come in on his steed and save the offense, which made me laugh a little bit, just because this is not piling on, but the numbers are what they are. Like, in 1,900 plate appearances in his career, that's not a small sample size. He has a career 71 WRC+. And he'll be 27 in a couple weeks. So it's possible. And in fact, like, he was a top flight prospect. That has to be said out loud. He does have talent. But, you know, I have a hard time ignoring what he's been in his career versus 7 games. So he might help them, no question about that. But I had to kind of roll my eyes a little bit at some of the coverage he was getting of like, oh, they have this, like, they were treating him like he was Drew Waters or something, like this, like, guy who's going to maybe get hot and save them. And it's like, well, he used to be that prospect, and now he's 26, almost 27, and has never hit really ever.
Yeah, I mean, you always hold that hope, right? Like, you know those success stories
in
baseball.
Yeah.
Not everybody has to be a star when they're 22, but you're right. I mean, the numbers are what they are. He was not very good in Milwaukee. I mean, Milwaukee effectively gave him away. I know the Braves gave up a couple of relievers to get him, but he's fun to watch. I'll give him that. I mean, he swings every swing like it is his very last swing.
He is
not looking to go the opposite way for a soft little single over the second baseman's head. He is trying to hit everything 500 feet, and I'll take that all day long. He is entertaining to watch, and right now, just given the state of the roster, even if he is close to an average hitter and can hold his own defensively in left field, he hasn't been challenged a ton out there yet. Why not? There's just not much else on this roster right now who you could play over him. And if he's fun to watch there for the next couple months or weeks or however long it is, sign me up.
Yeah, I mean, optimistically, after I painted that negative, and I know it was a negative picture, but that's kind of how I view things a lot of the time. I will say this: his best season in the majors was last year. So if you wanted the evidence that maybe he's just getting better, that would be part of it, is that he was almost a league average hitter last year, and kind of a small sample size like everybody was, but he was a decent player last year for the Brewers. And on top of what we said about him having that pedigree, I think he does, while he hasn't been as good this year and as like guys like Almonte and Heredia have been for this season, I think objectively he has more upside than the Adrianza, Heredia, Almonte trio. Would you agree with that? Sounds like you do.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Guillermo's been really good this year, and he's just fun as hell to watch with his pink pirate sword, so I would keep playing him.
Okay, that was incredible. Let's talk about that for a second. That was absolutely – I didn't mention that on the podcast so far. Can we – Does he just carry those around? Like, what's going on with that?
I want to know. I mean, was he like walking around a mall one day and said, oh, let me get these swords for the boys tonight? Like, and he's always screaming. Like, every time the camera pans to Guillermo in the dugout, he's like screaming at somebody.
He's having fun.
He's a lot of fun. Yes. He has been by far one of the best parts of this whole year. To answer your question, yes. Like, I think I would take him over Almonte. Adrianza really hasn't been very good after the first couple weeks of the year.
Yeah.
But yes, I think you certainly play Arcia over those guys and see what you get. I mean, you never know. For every guy who doesn't work, you do have a Max Muncy, of course, famously changed his career when he was like 29 years old. I'm not saying that Arcia is going to be an all-star level player for the Braves for the next 5 years, but I would. I'm with you. I would roll that dice and see if there's anything left there, especially in the second half that has the potential to have a lot of games that just don't mean a whole lot.
Yeah, the potential. I don't want to back us into a corner. Like they're not dead. We're not calling them dead. But I think Arcia's upside is considerably higher just based on the pedigree. So roll them out there. See what happens. Last thing on the lineup that I want to mention is that there was a transaction at catcher last week, and it was Contreras going down for Jonathan Lucroy, a former like all-star level player in Lucroy. He's not that guy anymore. Contreras,
in his prime, he was awesome. I always thought he was going to end up on the Braves too. It was just one of those guys like him and Mike Moustakas. Like I was convinced they were going to be on the Braves one day, and I guess it happened 5 years too late, but it is what it is.
Yeah, Lucroy, I believe was like a top five MVP finisher one. Yeah, he was. He finished fourth in the MVP voting in 2014 with the Brewers. So like that tells you he led the league in doubles. He had 53 doubles in a season as a catcher.
Wow. Yeah, he was a hell of a player.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway, he's not that guy anymore. But long story, the story really is Contreras. So while I think everyone knows Contreras has a real bat in the future potentially, the last month he has a 505 OPS. That's OPS, folks, not slugging, not OBP, OPS for 23 games. It's not a huge sample size, but if you're wondering why he went down, that is why. He just kind of stopped hitting completely, and the defense is not incredible anyway. Do you like this approach of like just letting him go play every day in AAA? Are you okay with this? Like, what was your reaction to that?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a fan of Contreras's. I think, as you said, he certainly has a future in this league. But yeah, he was someone, even though he had glowing reviews at the alternate site last year, I know Mark Bowman said that he improved himself more than maybe any other player in the organization last summer at the team workouts on the taxi squad. He was somebody who was probably impacted by the COVID shutdown more than your average prospect. I think the younger guys will be okay because they were still years away. You know, last year, Contreras should have gotten 600 plate appearances between double and triple A. And frankly, if Darnot doesn't get hurt like he did, I don't think Contreras sees Atlanta at all this year, maybe gets called up later. So it's not an excuse for him. He was good early on, and then his approach kind of went out the window a little bit. But yeah, let him get right. You don't want the kid to get too, lost in his head a little bit too much. Yeah, there you go. I think it's the right move at this point, and hopefully he's able to come back at some point, whether it's this year in spring training next year, and make a real impact. Because I think he could be a very special player. He just needs a little bit more time.
Yeah, there was a relatively optimistic update from Snicker about Darnot, him coming back in August. You know, August is a full month, and we don't know if that means August 2nd or August 31st. I don't know what that means, but August is at least a target for Darnot. And, you know, he will help them. As much as we thought he was probably going to cool off this year, Darno's baseline is a lot higher than a lot of guys that they have in the lineup right now. So he would be a huge sort of shot in the arm if you can get him back. But in the meantime, the catching platoon of Lucroy and Smith is bottom of the barrel stuff. As much as we've talked about how low the catching baseline is in the baseball, it's been one of the themes of this podcast, that's below the baseline. Lucroy in 2021 with Smith is not going to get it done.
Yeah, that's very bad. Days of they will make the Kurt Suzuki, Tyler Flowers tandem look like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig out there.
Yeah, basically. All right, let's get away from hitting and do some pitching stuff real quickly here before we get some projections and a bit of a look ahead later on in the show. Ian Anderson might go on the IL. We're recording this Wednesday night. There was like some open discussion on Sunday about him going on the IL, and that has not happened as of this recording. He has some shoulder inflammation. When they talk about that kind of stuff as openly as they do, I expected that to happen. I kind of still do. That's a problem because they need Ian Anderson to be good, and he has had some shoulder stuff in the past, which is not what you want. I don't have a takeaway from that. Just wanted to make sure that we mentioned it because they need the pitching to be – the pitching's been good, by the way, lately, which we'll get into in a second, but Anderson's a big part of that.
Yeah, I think you have to take every precaution and some with someone like Ian Anderson, a guy who figures into your long-term plans so much. And anytime it's a shoulder injury for a young pitcher, you have to hold your breath a little bit. Let's hope, this being his first full season in the majors, it is just a little bit of wear and tear and inflammation, and maybe they shut him down, even if they want to shut him down for longer than the standard 10 days or whatever it is. I would be good with it. I think you have to protect that asset as much as you can, and hopefully it's nothing major.
Yeah, that's the hope. You know, shoulders are tricky, and you never want to, you know, you don't want to panic, but it's not the greatest sign in the world. Elsewhere, though, the pitching has been fairly decent. You know, for example, starting pitcher ERA this year is 4.05, which is not great, but that's 14th in the majors. That, like, you can get by with that. Bullpen, though, is in the bottom 10, 4.58. We'll start with a couple guys in the rotation. Charlie Morton has been the guy they signed recently. He's up to over 2 Fangraphs WAR in 18 starts. He's on pace for, you know, 3.5, basically. That's totally fine. He has a sub-3 ERA in his last 10 starts. He's not, like, a top guy, but Charlie Morton has been as advertised, basically, for the full season.
Yeah, and he's just fun to watch. I mean, when he gets in a groove, he throws strikes. His strikeout rates are really, really good. As you said, he has been, full stop, the guy that they paid all that money for last winter. He started off a little slow, and we talked on this podcast, even early on in the year, when, you know, a start for him wasn't going great, it was really just one bad inning that would do him in, and then he was fine the rest of the way. He's been very good. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Charlie over the next 2.5 weeks and what his future holds, but he has been outstanding lately and by far and away the best on the team.
Yeah, and that's kind of – there's not even a huge takeaway there. I guess we will save most of our buy-sell stuff for the next couple shows after today. One of the big debates is where they should sell on Morton. I think they're going to wait until closer to see where they are in the standings. But at a minimum, he has been good this year, and that's all you can really ask out of him. Drew Smyly, podcast favorite, has a sub-3 ERA. He has a 2.75 ERA in the last 6 weeks, Scott.
Every time I tweet Drew Smiley's name, I'm going to tweet Drew Smiley, podcast favorite.
Exactly. I mean, you should. Listen, it might be smoke and mirrors. Like, his peripherals do not support a sub-3 ERA, but 6 weeks of solid production from Drew Smiley, no complaint. And by the way, this is crazy. His ERA is more than 2 full runs better than Max Fried's in the last 6 weeks.
Yep.
Drew Smiley has been full stop better than Max Fried for 6 weeks now, which is insane.
Yeah, he has been better. Yes, for sure. I mean, there was times early in, like, April and May, it was like, goodness, are they going to have to pull this guy from the rotation? Like, it was bad.
I mean, we talked about it. Like, he had maybe one or two more, like, blow-ups, and it was going to be you can't pitch him anymore, basically.
Yeah, yeah. You fake, you know, you say he's on the injured list with a groin pull or something like that, and you send him to the Gwinnett for a month and see if he can figure it out. He has been better. Maybe, again, I know where, if it's not obvious by now, we're intentionally not trying to make this a trade deadline preview because
we'll save that for later. Listen, yeah. I mean, there's plenty of time for that because, yep, I know it's only 2 weeks away, but that is the only topic. And I get it. But if that's all we talk about for the next 3 weeks, like, you know,
yeah, it'll get very redundant in a hurry because you could talk about everybody and it's going to be the same conversation.
And honestly, to be fair, we'll get into this in a second, but I personally think that how they play in the next 10 days will impact it on some level, because if they're, if they go on a run here, again, that's not likely, but if they're suddenly, if they're 2 games back, they're not going to sell everyone. They're just not going to do that. I don't think. So we'll save that for later as a broad, but a lot, for better or worse, you can argue against this process, but I do think that the results of the next 2 weeks will dictate a lot of what they do.
Well, and as a good housekeeping note, it's a good point. I wanted to bring it up, and I see it here. The upcoming schedule is very difficult.
It is.
They open up with the Tampa Bay Rays, who somehow just continue to get better and better every year. Tampa Bay is very good. Then they get the San Diego Padres, who are very good and very talented, and that's not going to be an easy series. And then you have 9 games in 8 days against the Phillies and the Mets on the road. The Braves cannot seem to beat the Phillies in Philadelphia for whatever reason, and the Mets are getting healthier and have given the team problems at times this year. And then you're facing the Milwaukee Brewers, I believe, is who the Braves will face the weekend of the trade deadline. And the Brewers have been the best team in baseball for the last, like, 6 weeks. So go get them, boys. No pressure.
It's not easy. I mean, they needed to kind of make the run before the break, and they didn't really do that. But alas. So, yeah, it's interesting to see what they're going to do. But that can't be the only topic. So one thing I wanted to say broadly about the pitching, as much as I picked on Max Fried, who has struggled recently, in the last 24 games, I pulled this stat today, the Braves have a team ERA. This includes the bullpen. And by the way, it's about even on the starters in the bullpen. So the bullpen's been pretty good too. They have a team ERA of 3.48 in 24 games. Now, that is like top 5 in the league. That's borderline elite awesome, which kind of flew into my radar a little bit, but I guess I buy it after looking back. The problem is the staff probably isn't as good as that number is in real life, given where they are right now with no Soroka, etc. And they only, quote-unquote, only went 14-10 in that run. Now, 14-10 is good. That's not like a bad number, but the schedule was easier than it's going to be for a while, and when you pitch like that, you need to win more than they won in that 24 games, especially when you're already digging a hole before that run began.
Yeah, and again, I mean, the one silver lining or saving grace is that as we record this and on the All-Star break, if the Braves were in either of the other divisions in the National League, the season would be over.
It would be over.
Over in big letters, O-V-E-R. But the Mets are not great. I mean, they're 47-40, which is fine. But they have injuries. We'll see if they can ever get their rotation healthy. The Phillies are basically the same team that they have been for 4 years now. The Nationals look like they were going to make a run and then had some injuries. So because of that, the Braves are still in it. They're only 4 games back in the standings, which is not bad by any means. If they were fully healthy with a roster ready to go, I would say, all right, bring it on. I think they have a decent chance. But because of everything going on, it doesn't seem likely, but as we've said a couple times, it is certainly not over, and who knows what the next couple weeks, maybe they'll come out and surprise us and go 10-4 over the next 2 weeks and turn this into something to watch in the second half.
Yeah, to your point, they would be 13 games out of the lead in the National League West right now behind the Giants. Oh. They're 11 behind the Dodgers in the same division. They'd be 7.5 out of the Central with the Brewers playing. And that's what the Brewers lose in the last 3 games before the break. So, the NL East, which was supposed to be arguably the second best division, maybe the best division in the National League, has been the worst by far. And that gives them sort of the open door. So that's a good place to transition. Let's get into some projection systems. Now, this is not everything, but I want to throw some data at you and tell you where they are. Now, these projections don't all take into account the Acuña injury. That's something I have to say. I mean, maybe they do, and they don't release their formulas. So FanGraphs, I think, does, because they talked about it on a podcast that I heard. But they have the Braves projected to finish 80-82. That would be 8 games behind the Mets and 2 behind the Phillies. They have the Braves with about a 7.9% chance to make the playoffs. So not dead, but very, very unlikely. 538, I'm not sure about this one with regard to Ronnie, but they have 82-80, which is still 4 games behind the Mets, a 20% chance to make the playoffs. And then Sportsline, which is the CBS gambling outfit, this is proprietary information, but I do some work for them, so I actually have the data, which is breaking news here, folks. Anyway, it definitely does take Ronnie's injury into account. I confirmed that today. But they have the Braves at 81-81 without Acuña the rest of the way, which is 6 games behind the Mets and 3 behind the Phillies with about a 12% chance to make the playoffs. So long story short, the Mets are projected widely for like 87 or 88 wins by these systems. And if you assume that is going to win the National League East, or at least a reasonable projection to win the National League East, Scott, the Braves would have to finish 44-29 to get to 88 wins. So 88 wins does not guarantee you by any means a playoff spot, by the way. No. That's just a reasonable, like, maybe that would be enough to win the National League East or at least tie the Mets. 44-29 is a 98 win pace for a full season.
Yeah.
And given what we said before I let you interject here, given what we laid out before about what the available roster looks like, that I think we can all agree that on paper, the available talent for the Braves is not a 98 win team.
It's not. And I think maybe this, you know, maybe this is too down the road, but I think it's an interesting point to bring up. At some point, you have to ask yourself, what is the importance of winning these games in 2021? Because on you just listed off all the percentage chances. It sounds like they have maybe a 1 in 10 chance in winning the division. I think that's high. I'd probably put it around 5-ish% myself. But is it worth keeping Charlie Morton? Let's say that the trade deadline comes and they're 5 games back of the Mets. On paper, it's tough to give up, right? Like, you know, it's tough to give up when it's only 5 games. It's baseball. You have 2 good weeks or even a good series against the Mets, and all of a sudden things look different. But is it worth hanging on to Charlie Morton if teams are willing to pay a premium to get him for 2 months plus the postseason? Or if a team wants to take Will Smith, and maybe Will Smith isn't a great closer, but he could be a really good eighth inning guy for a contending team. If you have a chance to better the future of this franchise, when you know it is very unlikely they make the playoffs, and even if they do, I mean, what's the upside here without Acuna in the playoffs in the postseason? You know, is it worth hanging on to some of these assets if you can better the team for 2022 and beyond? That's easier for us to think and talk about because we are not the ones trying to sell tickets. We are not the ones thinking about the long-term financial picture of this team. But I do think it's worth bringing up because there will be, again, not to turn this into the trade deadline preview podcast, but there will be assets and teams will call if they haven't already started calling Anthopoulos, asking about these players that contending teams are going to want, especially when it's a team that, as you just said, the starting pitching has been pretty good lately. Pitching is always at a premium. There's usually hitters available at the deadline, and you don't have to pay a ton for them. Pitching forever has been the key at the trade deadline. And if you can get some assets for 2022 and beyond, I think it's at least worth looking at. And maybe these things will work themselves out over the next 2 weeks, and the Braves either go 12-2 or they go 2-12, and it's just much more apparent. And that's, of course, something we just don't know. But I do think that's a point worth bringing up of I would rather think long term here than win a couple of silly, meaningless games in September for a year where it's just not going to happen because of all the injuries.
I'm glad you said that because I generally have the same thought process. Like, if we're being realistic, even if they were to get hot in like a 2005 baby Braves kind of way and make this, like, you know, improbable run to win 88, 89 games and win the division, that would be fun. I mean, I would enjoy that. But, you know, the upside of it, like the meaning of that is interesting as sort of as a talking point and how much they value selling tickets the rest of the season, how much they value the faint chance to make the playoffs, because even the biggest optimistic Braves fan would tell you that they're not favored to make the playoffs. I mean, you might say 25% instead of the 5 or 10% chance that you've said, or the systems might have 15 or 20, but no one's saying 51% right now. Like, I don't think anyone, no one could say that given where they're, given the roster, given the injury to Acuna, given the deficit against the Mets, even if you don't believe in the Mets, which is a totally reasonable opinion, they do have a multi-game advantage here. And it's not just the Mets either. They have to also beat the Phillies and they have to also beat the Nats. So anyway, with all that said, it's an interesting discussion, and there are always dynamics in play. As much as I'd like to believe that winning baseball games is all that matters to the decision makers involved, we know that it's not the case. I mean, we know that they have to worry about selling tickets, and we know that there are business things involved, and but also personalities, and also, you know, real people involved as well. That's always a factor. One thing I will say is that of all the guys that you would consider selling on, I think I am very confident they can get something for Charlie Morton. Even if you wanted to be a pessimist on the rest of the available guys who are expiring contracts, take Freddie out of it for now, but like your Smileys, your, you know, whoever you want to say, Charlie Morton would have value. Like, there's almost no doubt about that.
He would have good value.
So I mean, that's the guy number one. Like, if you're talking about like he's the number one example of the decision. Really, it's like, do you trade Charlie Morton on? He's on a 1 year contract. He's old. He's not part of your long term future. That's the example A, B, C of what you would be thinking about. Now, I will say this, I didn't realize this until right now when you were talking. Did you happen to know who the Braves play in the series before the trade deadline? It is the New York Metropolitans.
Yes, for five games.
So basically, and this it's not this simple, but now that I know this and I've seen this, I will now be stunned if they make a decision before that series is over.
Yeah, and that's probably fair, because if you win 4 out of 5,
that's what I mean. Like,
yeah, you start to get some good mojo. Maybe a good trade or two comes your way. You know, if you can make incremental upgrades without mortgaging any kind of future, then do it. I mean, especially if they're signed beyond 21. But yes, looking at it now, it's funny you say that. So that series, they play 5 games in 4 days. It starts July 26th and it wraps up on Thursday, July 29th, which is, you know, a day before the deadline.
At 12:10, by the way, that Thursday game is a getaway day.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a doubleheader, so you're guaranteed to see Jacob DeGrom that week.
It's just, I mean, honestly, you and I wouldn't think about it this way, but if the Braves are within 10 games when that series starts, there is the faint hope that you just go out and win all five and save your season in that thing. So it's on one hand, it's fortunate that they play them there, because then the season like could literally swing on that series. If you go in that series and you lose 4 out of 5 and suddenly you're 9 games back, maybe you do turn around and sell because the season's over. Whereas if you win 4 out of 5 or you sweep them or something crazy and you're within a game, they're not selling. And we all know they're not going to sell. So that's an interesting dichotomy. They, as you mentioned before, they do have that tough schedule before then, so it could get ugly before that even happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, 5 with the Mets the last week of July is a pretty wild circumstances given where they are right now.
Well, and then you talk about all of the other things at play. This is not a black and white issue of, do you want to win games or are you building for the future, right? There's all these other elements and layers. But on the public relations aspect of this all, and not that you want to make baseball moves or any kind of sports move based on public relations.
It matters though.
Kind of know, it absolutely matters.
Yeah.
It would be difficult if the Braves win 4 out of 5 games that week in New York and the Boston Red Sox come calling saying, hey, we're going to offer you this really good package for 2 months of Charlie Morton. It's a little bit of a different ball game than if the Braves have lost 10 out of 13 and they go 1-4 against the Mets to wrap up the month of July. That is a much easier press release to hit send on, which again is not the ultimate deciding factor, but I think
it's a factor. It is. It just is.
And you hope that these things kind of play themselves out a little bit.
Yeah. And a quick rundown here, you know, yes, Freddie's a free agent, but put Freddie aside, Morton is a free agent next year. Smiley is a free agent next year. Travis d'Arnaud is a free agent next year. Chris Martin is a free agent. Shane Green, who has struggled mightily, is a free agent. They have some guys who are expiring. In addition to guys that aren't expiring but like aren't long term, like Will Smith could be an interesting trade guy. He's under contract for the following season, but if he actually was a guy that a team might want, you might sell on that. So there are players. Like, no one's saying that they sell everybody and, you know, tear the whole thing down. Like, they have enough young talent where this is not a decision about like starting a rebuild. That's not what the Braves would be doing here. Whereas I know you and I covered a rebuild. It was a long rebuild. But they have enough young talent now where it's not press the eject button like it was with that Justin Upton team where they actually did just decide they were going to rebuild. They're too good to do that. It's just more of like, this season's a lost season, and now we're going to recognize that and pivot for next year, basically.
Yeah, it is. It is a good opportunity to hit the reset button, not to turn this now into a look ahead to 2022 and beyond. But it is. You have an outstanding young core. You have to cross your fingers and pray that Ronald Acuna makes a full recovery, and he certainly should, given his age. You have Ozzie Albies. You have Austin Riley. You have a handful of good young pitching. You still have some pretty good depth in the minor leagues. It's not like you're talking about a system that has minimal talent and they just traded away their entire top 10 to, you know, go all in for a couple of seasons. The window is by no means closing, but I do think this offseason and really this next couple of months is a really good opportunity to take a step back, hit the reset button. You have very little money committed next year, and it could be even less so depending on what transpires over the next couple of weeks.
Yes.
There is an opportunity to not let this thing get off the rails.
No.
And that, of course, requires good, whether it's a trade or a free agency and all that. And again, that's a conversation for another day. But this is not a team that there are just a million red flags on the horizon. And it's like, oh my God, are they going to have to rebuild again? No, they won't have to do that. And I've seen there's been some talk, and of course fans are an emotional group and it's easy to kind of get lost in the sauce a little bit, but there are still some really good things about this franchise right now. And it might just require a little bit of a pressing pause and then reimagining things a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. We will not do any more on future stuff right now. I do want to ask you one question about this season, and I'll set it up so you have time to think about it. I'm going to ask you for your win projection, knowing the following. The Braves are 44-45 right now. You know the injury situation. You know that Ronnie's out for the season. You know that Darnell might come back at some point. Soroka is not going to come back at some point. Ozuna is a giant question mark. I have no idea what's happening there. Trade possibilities, schedule, projection systems. I set all of that up to ask you where you think the Braves end this season in terms of, I know it's impossible to do this because
sure,
a lot is dictated by what they do at the deadline, but average it all out for me. Like, for instance, like I think the consensus projection is basically like 80 wins in the systems right now, 80 and 82, which is essentially playing the same that they've played so far this year, which might seem a little bit optimistic without Acuna.
Sure.
So I will answer first so that you have more time. I would land hedging it all out with the potential to sell, potential to buy. They could still buy, which I don't know if I would, but that's possible. I would say something like 79, 80, something like that. High 70s, maybe as much as 500, but barring some, I mean, there are outcomes where they win more than that. I don't want anybody to hear us more pessimistic and not understand this. We are acknowledging this. Like they can, this is baseball, man. They can get hot here and finish with 84 wins, and I will not be surprised, like at all.
Sure.
But projection is not the same thing as possibility. So I said all that to give you more time. Scott, where would you land?
That's a pro move right there, Bradley.
Hosting.
It's without having the crystal ball to know what happens over the next 2.5 weeks. I think I would be similar to where you're at. I would say maybe 78 wins. I've always thought that the last couple of weeks for teams that are not involved in the playoff hunt are just kind of meaningless. Like, was it 2016 where the Braves were like 30 games out of first, but they won like 16 out of their last 18 games in order to, to feel good a little bit. There's also teams that are out of it in September and they truly don't care anymore. And they just get blasted and they go 5-25 over their last 30. I don't know if we'll necessarily see either of those extremes, but
no,
if I had to put a number on it, I would say that it's going to be 77, 78 wins. They have a very difficult schedule coming up. They also have two lengthy West Coast road trips remaining.
your wheelhouse, Scott. That's for you.
That will be a absolute joy to let's hope that there's something to still get excited about. But they still have to go out west. They still have to play the Dodgers. They still have to play the Padres. They still have to play the Giants. I believe they still have quick math here. They have 21 games remaining against the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants, who have 3 of the 5 best records in baseball. That's going to be tough. They also have significant games against the Mets, who will be buyers at the trade deadline. Even the Phillies might buy. So there's not a whole lot of it's not as if they've played the league's most difficult schedule and they have a bunch of games against the Pirates and the
It is a little bit to be I will try to paint that. I'm the eternal optimist. I will point out that they actually are like more middle of the pack in schedule strength rest of the way, just because they play like your Arizona Diamondbacks and the Orioles. Like they do have some really, really easy series as well, which kind of balances. But in practical terms, I agree. Especially early on when the decisions have to be made in the next couple of weeks is when the schedule is at some of its more challenging. Like the Rockies are terrible, for instance. Like they have to go to Colorado like as part of a long road trip. And that isn't always fun, like even though the Rockies are not good.
Yeah, it's going out west for East Coast teams has forever been a challenge, right? Like it's just not an easy thing to do. So because of that, I think if this team was a little bit healthier, I think there'd be some reason for optimism. And it is certainly not over. Maybe this team will surprise us here over the next couple of weeks and go on a run and make for a really fun storyline to watch over the second half of the year with minimal expectations, especially after losing Acuna. It could happen. It's baseball at the end of the day. Who knows what's gonna happen? But it's just one thing after another with this team, just unable to get healthy. And of course, as we've said on this podcast almost verbatim, the one thing that cannot happen is lose Ronald Acuna or Freddie Freeman for any extended period of time. And of course, they lose Ronald 2 days before the All-Star break. It's going to be tough to overcome, but maybe we'll be wrong and some magical things will happen here.
Yeah, I mean they definitely built a roster this year that was reliant on a handful of guys. Even if you want to go beyond Ronnie and Freddie, there are five or six guys that they cannot afford to lose. Those guys are the two number one examples. But then you go into like Ozzy and Charlie Morton, I think, and maybe like, you know, one more pitcher, Ian Anderson, maybe, like are like on that list of guys they can't afford. And honestly, you would have maybe said Ozuna coming into the year, and Ozuna's not around. Soroka's already out, and now you throw in the best player on the team. It's just sometimes it just doesn't break your way. So it's not over by any means. We don't mean to say that it is. It's just worth acknowledging the reality that this team has not been very good this season, and now they are worse on paper than they were a week ago, which is not what you want. So with that rosy picture painted, Scott, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
I think it's ask yourself this.
It is. I mean, we're not trying to be negative. Yeah. It's just the reality. Like they're not, look at the raw. I mean, there's a reason why I set this up this way, to go through the lineup from Sunday and just like line by line, like the current available talent is just like, no one would have picked this team to win the division with this roster. No one would have done that. I'm sorry. It's just, they wouldn't have.
And without Acuna, if by some chance they're still in it and you say, well, they should try to make a move, you know, I would argue that because just the unlikeliness of something really good happening in 2021, you know, it kind of takes away a little bit of your player pool for who you could trade for. You're obviously, unless the team is just giving them away, you're not going to trade for a player with an expiring contract for 21.
No.
And even a player who signed through 22, like Joey Gallo, for example, you know, the likelihood of him really paying dividend this season for the cost you're going to have to pay is not great, right? Like, why trade for a guy if a third of his time is going to be on a team that doesn't make the playoffs? And then who knows where you're going to be next summer? I think there's opportunities to make those changes in the offseason. I don't know, but.
I don't know is the theme of this podcast, but no,
I don't know.
I know that we'll probably get some people that are mad at us for being negative, but we're not trying to be. I promise we're not. It's just when you're already not playing very well and your superstar 8-10 win player is out for the season, it's just not a lot of excitement to be had. But hey, if they come out of the gate and sweep them the Rays this weekend, fire up the machines, baby. We're ready to go.
Bye.
Yeah, we'll see. So in terms of podcast planning, I'm not sure when we'll do another episode. It'll be soon, as it always is. I'm not sure if we'll come back this weekend in our normal slot or not. Maybe we will. But there's been so much on the feed recently. Again, I want to shout out the Road to Atlanta guys for recording three times in basically 3.5 days. It's been busy. So there's plenty of audio content here, and the Braves don't play again until Friday, and nothing's going to change between now and then. So I don't know when, but the best way to find the podcast would be to subscribe to the show, and we'll have at least, I would say, two more episodes between now and the deadline, which is the deadline 16 days from now. So two more episodes coming, maybe even more than that, depending on what happens, but I can promise you two. Scott, anything you have going on in the world other than your Phoenix Suns playing in the finals?
Love my Phoenix Suns and my Atlanta Hawks. I'm bi-coastal, Brad. You know that. No, thanks to everybody for tuning in. We really do appreciate your support. You guys are the reason that we do this every week and yep. multiple times every week at that. So thank you for tuning in. And hey, even if things don't go as well as we hoped in the second half, continue to tune in. It really, really helps us out. And hit the subscribe button. And yeah, Brad, it was good to be on with you, and I hope all is well.
Yes, sir. It's mid-July. We're out here grinding away, and the season resumes on Friday. It's always weird to not have a baseball game on every day, basically. And like tonight, for instance, like last night, All-Star game. Tonight, there's basketball on for me, but no baseball. And then tomorrow, there's one game, and it's Yankees Red Sox. It's like, all right, well, I'll probably watch it, but it's on.
It's kind of nice with the NBA Finals being delayed this year.
There's something on?
Usually this is infamously the worst sports day of the year. Like
it's today. Yeah, usually the day after the All-Star game in baseball is the day where they're well, for me, I'm usually in Las Vegas covering Summer League, and there's Summer League basketball, but that's not actually games that count. So yeah, usually there's just nothing, and there was a massive sporting event tonight that's actually happening as we're talking. So, yeah, usually maybe it's tomorrow instead with only one baseball game and nothing else. Maybe it's Thursday.
Yeah, usually you turn on ESPN and there's like tractor racing and professional cornhole on, and you're like, oh, okay.
Well, actually, isn't it usually the ESPYs, which I never watch, but isn't it usually the ESPYs on the Wednesday? Maybe it is.
Maybe that would make sense. Or I think the X Games or the Something X like Games that. Still the thing.
At any rate, there's stuff to watch. So. Braves return to action on Friday. Tampa Bay and San Diego for six games in a row. And they are good at baseball. So, strap in. Thank you, Scott, for joining me. Again, one more time, subscribe, rate, review. Thank you for listening to the podcast. And we'll see you all next time.